This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Because if you can tell me what your habits are, I can tell you what sort of a person you are. I can tell you what your future looks like.
But like I always say, life is 10% what happens to you. It's 90% what you do about it.
The people who are most effective in the workplace believe that their future is going to be bigger than their past. When people don't believe that their future is going to be bigger than their past, they begin to disengage.
You're listening to The Circuit of Success, a podcast dedicated to helping you achieve success in every facet of life. Only on the lineupmedia.fm podcast network. Now, your host, Brett Gilliland.
Mr. McClellan, what's up, buddy?
What's going on?
How are you, man?
Good.
Got his Nomad shirt on. He's got his hat on. He's ready to rock.
Straight off the tractor.
I like it. I like it. We got anything besides a little Brace for Impact you want me to mention on here today?
No.
Whatever. 2011 World Series champ, Colin McClellan.
That's right.
Can never take that away from you. There's Mr. Brian Jordan. What's up, Brian?
BJ.
Oh, you there, Brian? Can you hear us? He looks like he's getting ready to go golfing. What are you doing up at the farm?
We're actually burning right now, burning the timber. And then I had to mow 15 acres yesterday to get ready. I'm planting some CRP.
Got it. What is CRP?
Like warm season grasses, switchgrass, stuff like that, bedding.
BJ!
What's up, Kyle? What's happening, man?
What's up, man?
How you doing?
What's been up to?
Same old, same old. How about you?
Same thing, but staying in the house.
You getting the kids reading still?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I'm doing that virtual classroom stuff.
Yeah. Crazy, isn't it?
The world is crazy right now, man.
Man, you ain't lying.
Hey, Brian, yeah. Is it possible for you to move your phone sideways or your iPad, whatever it may be?
Sideways.
There we go.
Is that better for you?
Looks good. Thank you. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. Jeez.
Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah.
You in Atlanta?
Yeah, in Atlanta.
Okay, very good. Told Kyle, looks like you might be hitting the golf course today.
I actually am, man.
Are you?
As soon as I finish this thing, I'm headed over.
Where are you playing?
Brookfield.
Brookfield, okay.
It's a private course down here in Roswell, Georgia.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Is that right outside of Atlanta?
Yep. About 35 minutes out.
Okay. So you're golfing. Kyle's going to be doing stuff out on his farm.
Farming.
I may go ride four-wheelers or something. I live on a golf course, but our golf course is closed, so I got to go out and just take a few clubs and walk around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Closed, huh?
Yeah, every course in Illinois is closed. Well, except the some of the exclusive private ones, but the one I live on is not like an exclusive private club.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, so that's it.
A lot of public courses are closed here, but some of the private courses are still open.
You play pretty often?
No, not really. No.
Are you better than Kyle, you think? You think you can beat Kyle?
I don't know. I don't know.
I break 100, it's a good day.
Well, in that case, I might be able to beat Kyle.
With that information, you might win.
Yeah.
It could be a setup, man. Watch Kyle.
Sharking.
I actually play with Ankiel down in Florida. I haven't played in a while. We played, and I shot like an 88 or 89.
Wow.
Exactly what I said. He just said 100. Now he's saying 88, 89. Yeah. Come on.
But I don't.
The guy that can barely break 100 doesn't shoot 88.
I don't normally do that. I stopped trying to swing so hard, and I was able to keep in the fairway. I didn't lose so many balls.
That's the key, man. You can't swing hard.
Ugh. I know, but it's fun. When you play scrambles, that's all I do. I go last, and I just hit as hard as I can.
Yeah, scrambles to get you in trouble real quick.
Yeah. I always tell my group, I say, look, we'll use five of my shots. They'll be really good shots.
Right.
But I will swing as hard as I can on every. That's my promise to you. But don't be expecting me to use like my irons and short game.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's funny. These other guys should be joining us soon. I practiced on Facebook just about 10 minutes ago. I've never done this before. So I was like, we'll see what happens.
We're your guinea pigs, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I practiced it on Zoom, though. It seemed pretty easy. I'll just go down here and hit go live on Facebook and then remember to hit live on Facebook and we're good to go.
Cool.
What do you think about this baseball thing? You think we'll be playing baseball sometime soon?
I don't know, man. I think with no fans, maybe.
I think they're going to cancel it.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. what's the point of playing with no fans? You're not going to make any money.
Well, you're going to make all that TV revenue. Everybody's going to be in front of the TV, man.
Right. Yeah,
that's true. But I think
where the money comes from anyway, right?
I think that you're not going to get – New York ain't going to be open. So even if you – Toronto's closed till, July 31st or whatever?
June 31st. Are they really?
Yeah. They closed Canada. No group gatherings till like June or July. New York ain't going to be ready.
I think they're going to use certain fields though, man. They're going to have to move the fields around, man.
Right.
Like you said, New York, Toronto, they'll be playing probably in Florida, Arizona, somewhere like that, because you really don't need the big venues anymore.
No, you don't.
You can play in spring training sites, to be honest.
Well, I said you have two motivated sides. The owners want to play and the players want to play, but you know that typically says you're going to get towards the deal. But, man, if this thing doesn't slow down till July – but here's the thing, too. When they say go, so if they say, all right, June 1st, all of a sudden they come on and say, we're open for business. Well, you got to give the players 3 weeks to get ready at least. So now you're talking, you know, into July.
Right.
I don't know, man. It's a mess.
When you think about people in contract years too, right? They got this year to prove what they're going to go get that big old contract, and now they may not even be able to do that.
Well, think about all these college seniors that are having.
I was just about to say, think about the college juniors and seniors who was hoping to get drafted.
Yep. Our high school senior, you're like, going to be a top five overall pick.
I know. My son's a high school senior, man. I'm like, this is killing me. But he's a basketball player, so he'll be all right somewhere. Huh?
Did he get to finish the season?
Yeah, they finished the season.
Oh, that's good.
They were sorry, so it didn't make a difference.
Yeah, they canceled the final, basically got down to the final eight in Illinois, and they just canceled it. Didn't even have a state champ this year, which is terrible for those kids.
Yeah, when you see March Madness shut down, that's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you knew it was getting real. When the NCAA.
Exactly. That was an eye-opener there. All that money lost in the gambling arena and everywhere else.
What's up, Izzy? What's up, Jay?
Izzy.
There he is.
Hey, Izzy in the house.
What up, fella?
Hey, happy birthday, BJ.
Hey, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, Brad Thompson's in the house.
How you doing on that cooking?
You see that cooking?
What's happening?
It's driving me crazy being at home.
Today's your birthday, Brian?
No, March 29th was.
Oh, happy birthday, March 29th.
Yep.
Brad Thompson, where are you coming to us from? You at home or where at?
No, I'm at work right now. I'm in a little cave, basically.
Little cave.
That's it.
ESPN. Can you
see
ESPN voice the way they say it on TV?
ESPN.
ESPN. You in your man cave, Izzy, or where are you at?
I'm down in the basement. I get better. I'm out in the country. I get better Wi-Fi at the house than I do in the man cave.
Oh, there you go. We'll wait for Mr. Simon Tazzi here, and then we will go live. Anybody have anything they want to make sure we chat about today?
No.
No.
Not really.
The Brad Thompson Fund.
Yeah, we started GoFundMe. I'm probably going to be out of a job soon. I don't know if you guys know this, but sports right. Talk with no sports isn't the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, I plan on asking you about that sometime today. That's crazy.
Perfect.
Man. I know. I'm in the same shoes, Brad. Yeah,
I know that. You've been good, man?
Good. I can't complain.
Nice.
Well, that's good. So let's check with Simon Tazzi here. He was on top of all the tech, so he should be good.
Brad, have they said anything? You're just business as usual.
Dude, just praying every day, you know, that's about it. But yeah, business as usual right now. At least our company is privately owned, so that they don't have stockholders yelling at them, but we'll see.
I'm going to go set up the Facebook Live thing. I don't think it'll lose me here, but I'll be right back.
Yeah, everybody, you guys know Healthy?
Yeah. So
except
far,
for Jimmy.
Izzy, you know Sean Farrell?
Yeah.
His wife's got it.
Oh, that's the Blues guy, right?
Yeah, the Blues video coach.
Yeah, Jimmy tested positive, didn't he?
Yeah.
I talked to Danny Mac yesterday. He said he's already working in his garage and shit, so he got his attention. He's good.
Did it actually come back positive?
Yeah, it came back. He put it on Instagram last night that it came back positive, and he's been, like Izzy said, he's been cleaning his garage for a few days.
He's good.
Hey, that's the first thing I would have done. I would have Instagram live me at the doctor. I feel pretty good about that.
That's right. That's right. I don't know. I think, what if we just get rocking here without old Simo? Or
let's get rocking. I got a golf play.
All right. I'm going to go live here, boys, so don't be cussing.
All right. No F-bombs, Brad.
Right. Here we go. Setting it up.
Now everybody's quiet.
Now everybody's exactly. You guys have been talking it up the whole time, and now you're quiet.
You said we couldn't say anything bad.
That's right. All right, we're live now, it looks like, gentlemen, which means nothing because I don't know what to do here. I've never done it before. So anyway, we'll let a few people join us here, and we'll get rocking. So appreciate all your guys' time today. I know we're all quarantined at home, which is a little crazy, but here we are. So anyway, I'm going to make just a brief introduction for everybody, if that's all right. Somebody have something to say there?
No, is this TikTok? Is this what all the kids are doing?
Yeah, let's start it off, Brad.
Exactly. This is TikTok, right? Oh.
This is not TikTok. We are, there's my son, Asher. He's over here. He's learning. We're all learning. I'm trying to figure out how to edit this deal where I'm not hearing myself twice.
I don't hear you twice. I hear you once.
You do? All right. Yeah. Well, let's just roll with that. So I'm going to make a quick introduction of everybody here. We've got my friend Kyle McClellan, even though it says Bridget McClellan on the screen over here, Kyle. We're going to go ahead. I'm sorry. There we go. My bad. This is what you learn to do right here. All right. So we got Kyle McClellan, top left. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing good.
Good, man. Thanks for being with us. Kyle played for the St. Louis Cardinals from 2008 until 2012 and played for the big leagues from 2008 to 2013. So thanks for being with us, Kyle. We got Brian Jordan over here. He looks like he's a professional golfer, even though he is one of very few athletes that played in the NFL and for the Major League Baseball, played professionally for the Atlanta Falcons as a safety from 1989 to 1991, played for the Cardinals from 1992 to 1998, now doing some TV stuff down there for our friends, the Atlanta Braves. So, Brian, thanks for being with us.
Hey, no problem, man. Anything to get out of cooking and cleaning and doing all that stuff, man, for the
kids. That's right. So. Well, we'll skip over here to Brad Thompson. Brad, 2005 to 2010, played in the big leagues, 2005 to 2009 with the Cardinals. He is a 2006 World Series champ and now on ESPN and Fox Sports Midwest. So, Brad, thanks for joining us, my friend.
No problem, Brad. Thanks for having me, man. And a lot like Brian said, anything to get out of the real world for a few minutes. Talk about some baseball, some fun stuff, man.
That's right. That's exactly right. And then we got Jason Isringhausen right there. Jason played from 1995 to 2012 in the big leagues. NL saves leader in 2004, two-time All-Star, 300 saves, and he was a recent St. Louis Cardinal Hall of Famer. So, Jay, thanks for being with us.
Hey, appreciate it. I'm glad to see everybody's doing good and healthy, and like everybody said, just a little break of the monotony of staying under roof, and I'm glad to be here.
That's right, man. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate this. We sent you guys a text, I guess, a week ago, and we whipped this together on what should be Cardinals opening day. Brad would be busy on the radio here this afternoon, but we'll talk about other stuff, I guess, won't you, Brad?
Yeah, we'll figure something out. We got 4 hours, so I'm contractually obligated to come up with something for 4 hours. Luckily, we got a good team, and we can BS pretty well.
That's good. That's good. You're good at that. So also want to wish Noah Seeley, Jessica Seeley's his mom, a friend of mine back from home in Mattoon, Illinois, Noah's 17th birthday, so we want to give a shout-out to Noah. So everybody give Noah a big old happy birthday.
What's up, Noah? Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
I know, Brian, you just had one a couple days ago.
I did, man. I'm getting younger, man. I just turned 35. If you switch that around, it's 53. So, yeah, I'm getting older.
Well, Izzy, I'm going to start with you. And you being a hometown kid, man, you grew up right down the road from Busch Stadium. And I just want to talk to the fans about what it was like that first time you were able to put on that St. Louis Cardinal jersey, take the field, kind of walk us through that background and what it was like.
It seems like many moons ago now, but One of the highlights of my career was being able to come home and play for my home team that I grew up watching, loving, you know, grew up watching the Ozzies, the Willies, the Vince Coleman's, the Bruce Suter's, and the Bob Forsches, and the names go on and on and on. Being able to be a part of the Cardinals and being able to suit up next to guys in spring training like Lou Brock and Bob Gibson, Stan was still around, Red Shandy's. I mean, it was just a dream come true for me. Hardest part I had to do is learn how to say no to people about asking for things, tickets and such. But, you know, it's like I said, it was a dream come true to play for my home team. And we had a lot of success during those years I was here, surrounded by unbelievable players like Jim Edmonds, Scott Rowland, Albert Pujols, you know, pitchers. I played with all these guys on this screen. Didn't play with BJ, but played against him. And now we take it onto our fantasy camp teams. And now he likes to steal hits from me to win championships.
Uh-oh. Well, I gotta ask then, Jason, did you ever pitch against Brian when you guys played? Do you remember what happened?
I don't remember. That's like one of the biggest things. I don't remember who I faced and things like that.
That's good. That could have got awkward fast if he hit, like, you know, a game-winning home run off of you or something. That would have been real bad.
I don't remember facing Izzy, to be honest. No.
I don't think we did. When was your last year? 90 what? Or 2000?
Come on, man. I got out at 2006, man. Jeez.
Yeah, and I don't remember facing him. I mean, I would, because I was with the Mets at the time in the mid-90s. And so I don't remember facing BJ at all. I do now in the fantasy camp. That's about it.
Yeah.
You told me a story one time, Izzy, that somebody was talking trash to you at fantasy camp and you threw a fastball off the guy's back. Is that true?
No, no, that was awesome.
Ryan Franklin did that to somebody. It wasn't me.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was you. I hit him twice.
I hit people on purpose.
Come on, you stuck him in the ribs, man. I remember that one.
That's awesome. Brian, talk to us if you can, man, about not many of us. I don't know about the rest of these guys. I didn't even do this as a Matt Toon Green Wave. I didn't even get to play baseball and football in high school, let alone at the big league level. So talk to us. Obviously, there's the physical side of the game. You know, you're tackling versus playing baseball. But what was it like, the preseason prep, the kind of the postseason, offseason, during season? Talk to us about playing two sports at the level you played.
Well, you know, I was used to it all my life. Played three sports all the way through elementary school into high school. And I knew as a kid I wanted to play two different sports professionally. You know, that was a dream of mine, and I never wanted to give up on that. So, you know, coming out of high school, basketball is really my favorite sport, but I knew reality was I wasn't 6'5", 6'6", and I wasn't a point guard, so I stuck with football and baseball going into college. I had to select the right college who would give me the opportunity. I was going to University of Maryland at first. Bobby Ross was the head coach. He said I could play two sports until I was ready to sign a dotted line. He told me I had to sit out a year of baseball. So I decided to go to University of Richmond, which allowed me to do both sports. And fortunately, my junior year, I got drafted first round by the Cardinals on the condition that I could go back, graduate from college, and play my redshirt junior year and give myself an opportunity to play professional football, which – really worked out well. Played 3 years with the Falcons, and you know, with the Cardinals, drafted me my junior year to, with the likes of playing with Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee and those guys. And like Izzy said, I had a chance to meet Stan Musial, Red Shane Deans down in spring training. George Kissel was probably my greatest mentor with the Cardinals. I mean, I didn't get any better than that. And I was fortunate enough to have that opportunity. And you know, after 3 years, the Cardinals came running and talked me out of football, which, you know, I don't have any regrets. Played 15 years of Major League Baseball, but I surely missed the game of football.
That's right. That's right. So that's awesome, man. Not a lot, like I said, not a lot of people are doing that. And was the post, I'm trying to think. So when you got done playing baseball, did you ever play, I guess you were, it wasn't at the exact same time, was it? So what was the postseason like when you had to either gain weight, lose weight for baseball versus football?
Well, the thing was, I was still in the minor leagues while I was playing in the NFL. My 3 years in the NFL, I played like single A, double A, and then the triple A. And then I was ready for the big leagues right after my third year in the NFL. And that's when the Cardinals bought me out of football. So I didn't have the opportunity, like Dion and those guys, to play professional baseball and football at the same time.
Nice work. So, Brad Thompson, next question's for you, and we'll talk because we want to get a lot of questions from the fans here. But
is it why I didn't play in the NFL as well? Because I get that a lot, Brad.
Well, that was the first question.
Yeah, no, it was a tough decision. Honestly, I had so many different schools beating down my door, and I decided to walk on to a junior college in St. George, Utah instead. You know, the road less traveled is a good
right. one. See what happens? See, we're talking sports here, guys. He's been hosting a radio show where he's not been able to talk about sports for about 3 weeks, so he's all amped up and ready to chat.
Yeah, I can go on any random tangent for 20 minutes. You just let me know.
All right, we'll let you know. If we need to fill some time here, we'll let you know. But talk to us about the 2006 World Series, man. You were there. I know one time you told me that it was the fastest sprint you've ever had from the bullpen to the jumping on the pile there. But walk our listeners through what it was like. I mean, being there, being at the game, as a fan, probably, but also as a big league player and what that meant to you as a player, but also for the brotherhood.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's no way really to describe it, and there's no way to get those feelings ever again. It was funny, though, as I was driving into work today, I live on the Illinois side, work in Creveport, and I'm driving past Busch Stadium, and I was thinking to myself, man, is there a feeling that's better than succeeding in, like, baseball, like having that good game? Like, I haven't found in my life, like, a feeling that is better than that one at this point. I will say on the flip side, I haven't had as far of a low as failing in baseball. So, I mean, maybe there's a happy medium in there somewhere. But I just remember 06, that being my first ever – it was my first opening day in 06. I got called up in 05, but I missed opening day. So, like, being there for the new ballpark, for Busch 3 and seeing that, like, first game there, yeah. Albert hits the home run. I mean, it was cool. Ended up beating the Brewers in the first game. And then seeing that stadium open and then closing it out in Game 5 of the World Series and taking that ride along the way, there's nothing like it. Everybody has a goal in spring training. Everybody has that their team says, hey, this is what we want to do. These are our goals. But I was so fortunate to come into a situation where the Cardinals had such a winning tradition, and it wasn't we hope to do this or we think we might do this. It's like, no, this is what we're going to do. This is what the expectations are. And there was such great leadership around these ball clubs. And Izzy, I mean, he's one of my favorite people on earth. He was one of my biggest mentors that I've ever had. And guys like him, man, helped me out a lot along the way. But what a ride it was.
So did Izzy have any, as your boy Chris Duncan would say, any man sodas that night after you guys won the World Series?
You know what, Brett? I can tell you something honestly. I don't remember. I don't remember. Probably, chances are, everybody had a good time. It was a little blurry for a couple of weeks in the celebration. Right. I got up to I carry my weight in my face when I'm not working out a lot. Okay, and now's the time. But I got up to like 215 pounds, and I think 80 of it was like right here. I had a lot of fun.
80 of it, huh? Right there.
Yeah, it was just right in there.
So you're in the bottom of the ninth. You know what's going on. You know what's getting ready to happen. I guess that was Waino. No, that was Mott on the mound, wasn't it?
Waino.
Waino on the mound.
Yep.
talk to us about that, man. You see it. It's happening.
Yeah. I still remember it, and I'm sure Izzy will remember this one as well. Braden Looper was down there, and he was like yelling at the police officers to get out of the way. It's like, come on, move, because they're like making sure the fans don't come in and go crazy. So they're trying to get into their post. We're trying to get into our sprint mode. Back to my fastest sprint I've ever had. And it's just that excitement. Anybody, it's like Christmas morning as a kid, right? Like, you know it's there. You're creeping down the stairs. And you're ready for that moment where you can actually open up a present, man. That's what it felt like. It was such anticipation for something you knew was going to happen. And, again, I can't remember having a feeling like that.
That's awesome. Kyle, same thing for you. I mean, 2011, you guys, game six, in my opinion, arguably the greatest game in the history of baseball. I'm probably a tad biased. I was there. My wife and it was our 10th wedding anniversary. We took my father. We took my father-in-law. And I can tell you, when David Freese hit that home run in game six, I've never seen my dad or my father-in-law jump as high as that. I mean, they might have set the world record for the highest jump. It was incredible. One of the best nights of my life. But walk us through that. Game six, game seven, and even what was it like around David Freese? Did you guys talk to Freese at all? Did you even bring up what he's doing? And you can take it from there. But talk to us about that.
Well, I'll start with Freese. So, you know, he wins the NLCS MVP.
And I think we lost him, didn't we, Brad? This is your – hey, you're the expert in this, Brad. You there?
No, I think he sounds fine. Yeah, we're losing.
Kyle, you there now?
Bridget, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Bridget, are you there? Man. There he is.
He's on a farm somewhere, you know, getting off a tractor to come join us, and now we can't hear him. All right, let's start all over, Kyle.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Okay. I'll start with Freese. You know, he wins the NLCS MVP, and it was just kind of like, don't touch him, don't talk to him, just let him keep going. You know, let this thing keep riding out and just stay hot. You know, you get in the postseason, you get somebody that's hot like that, and you just want to let him ride. And so for him, it was just keep him in his routine, keep doing that, because we knew we had Albert. We had all these other guys around him as well. But David was just absolutely on fire that whole stretch. And game six, we're watching it. I tell people all the time that when we got down to our last strike, I'm a guy that I always like to watch celebrations. So whether it's, it doesn't matter what sport, it doesn't matter what, I love to watch the celebrations and see people react to winning. If it's NCAA, if it's, you know, whatever it is, because that's what we all play for. We go through everything for that opportunity. And I remember watching, as we were down to our last strike, watching their dugout, the Rangers dugout, because I wanted to see what it was like to win the World Series. And then all of a sudden that ball gets hit and they're on the field. Like, there's players, as soon as it was hit, they're on the field, and then the ball drops and all of a sudden they're trying to get back into the dugout. And so then we're down to our last strike again with Lance Berkman up. And again, I'm looking into the dugout and they're not near as giddy to get up to that top step and to get on the field. But you just wanted to see it. You don't have many opportunities to get to the World Series. You want to see what that's like. And Lance hits that ball and all of a sudden it drops. And I remember running out there for game six at when we won and Freeze hit the home run. And I'll never forget running out there and thinking, this is the feeling that they were supposed to have, that they were so close to having and were running out on the field. It was like we won the World Series. And then we get back to the clubhouse, and I remember us all standing there and looking around and go, what do we do? Like, what do we do now? You know, we didn't know what was next. And somebody's like, I guess we should get in the shower and, you know, get ready for a game tomorrow. And I believe it was Kyle Loesch was going to start game seven, but we got rained out.
Yeah.
And so Karp was able to come and start on short rest. And I remember pulling up to my parking spot and I get out of my truck and somebody from the Fox Sports was like, hey, no game today. And I immediately thought, Karp's going to throw on short rest. And I went in and they're like, yeah, we're not playing. I was like, I don't care. Is Karp throwing tomorrow? And they're like, yeah, Karp's going. I was like, perfect. Because that's the guy you want it going for you in any situation with the season on the line. And so then we show back up for game seven and they put up two in the first and you're thinking there's no way we came back and did everything up to this point to come here and lose, you know? And so then we put up two in the bottom of the first. And I remember looking at Adam Wainwright and I said, there's no way they can come back from this. There's mentally and psychologically go through that, what they went through on game six to be up 2-0 and then now to be, you know, tied with two. And then thankfully that wasn't a close game because I couldn't take another close game. And, right. And then when you run out there, it's just like at that point, you know, it's, but you don't really know. You're up by what, 5 or 6 when we ended up winning it, but you didn't feel good based on what you saw two nights before. You didn't feel good about your chances until that ball was caught.
Man, I got to think the kid in you comes out when you're seeing a Freeze hit a walk-off home run like that. And obviously you guys didn't hear it, but you hear Joe Buck talk about, we will see you tomorrow night. I mean, what was that like running out on the field and just like, were you like a kid in a candy store again?
I think the best explanation is for people to go back and watch that and pick out Gerald Laird in that video and watch him because he jumps up like full ballerina mode. There's pictures of him too. It's hilarious. And Gerald, it just fits his personality. But his reaction is exactly that reaction. I'll see if I can come up and find it on my phone here. But it doesn't get any better, you know, to go out and to have that moment and that, especially at home too, you know, like, gosh, how much greater was all of that because it was there at Busch Stadium versus being in Texas? It would have been great. But man, just to be there for our crowd and you couldn't ask for a better story. That's for sure.
Unbelievable. Jason Simontacci's with us. What's up, Jason?
Technical difficulty. Maybe the Indian, not the aerial.
That's quite all right, man. That's quite all right. So, Jason, I was going to ask you, I hate to start with this now, your first question, but it was around Daryl Kyle. Man, you were the pitcher that started the game after the day after Daryl Kyle passed away. Just kind of wanted you to talk about, I think if I remember correctly, you said you were going through batting practice. You walk to the dugout, you find out. Talk to us about that, man. What was that like for you, the guys on the team, and what did that do for you as a ball club?
Oh, man. Well, so it was – I don't even know what day it was. I don't know if it was a Saturday or Sunday that we're playing, but it was a day game, obviously. And I just got done. Usually the starting hitter or starting pitcher gets about 5 minutes to himself. And so I get done swinging the bat, and I'm walking back to the dugout, getting ready to go back up to the clubhouse. And I had heard it might have been Jockety, Tony, and I think Barry, the three guys. And I heard something such as, like, what do you mean he's dead? But I didn't even really pay attention. I didn't know. Obviously, we're not thinking it's going to be DK, you know. But anyway, so I'm walking up the hall towards the clubhouse, and it's pretty good jaunt, whatever. And the next thing I know, I've got those three guys running past me, going up the hall. They get in the clubhouse, and me, I was, you know, I've only been there for a month, I think it was, and you know, it was unlike DK to be late, let alone not being around the guys and doing his business. But I get up to the clubhouse, and I walk in there, and it was kind of, I mean, it was quiet. No, everybody else was out at BP. A couple of the clubhouse guys were there, and just kind of went business as usual. And the next thing you know, it was like, here comes the players, just come shuffling in. And we were all in that small little bullpen or clubhouse, and I guess everybody we were all gathered around. Mike Matheny got up there, and he started saying some words, and we weren't really sure what was going on. So Mike just led us in a prayer, and as soon as he got up, it was like Tony walked in, and DK's dead, and it was like someone put a bomb in the middle of that clubhouse, and everybody dispersed. I mean, it was like people went everywhere, guys went everywhere, and it was I don't know. I mean, it's just still to this day, it was. I mean, besides hearing my dad die, but I mean, that was probably the worst day of my life. Knowing a fellow teammate, a guy that really put his arm around me just for the quick 3 or 4 months or weeks that I was there, and finding out how awesome of a guy he was because of everybody that was involved and started reaching out. But moving forward, that was pretty tough because obviously I was supposed to start that day, and somehow, should being in Chicago, my parents lived out in California, so they were listening to the game, the pregame stuff like that, and they mentioned something on TV that the game wasn't going to be played. So I got to listen to my mom bawling her eyes out on a voicemail on my phone saying, you know, Jason, please call me back. I hope it's not you. Please don't be dead. And you know, I'm just, you know, when you walk out that clubhouse, you can look down and you can see the stand or the fans walking by, and I remember hearing my mom's voice, and I remember watching my tears go down my eyes. Or down my cheeks and drop it on those people down there. They had no clue what was going on. I'm just, you know, it's just, it was horrific, man. It was, you don't, you know, it's not supposed to be that way. But it was, I don't know. I mean, it was, and then, you know, with everybody that MLB did and how they handled it, and Tony and Dunk, I mean, it was, that clubhouse, I mean, like I think we've talked about it before, and Izzy can attest to this. That clubhouse, I mean, when you watch guys or when you see guys that were on that team, it's not just, hey, man, what's going up? It was, we're brothers, and we went through something tragic like that, and there's a big hug, and there's appreciation of seeing each other, and the value of life was, and the real meaning of what's important came along that year.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, man. Sorry to drop that on you as your first question. That's a tough one, isn't it? Hey, Brad, I don't think you have to worry about your day job being lost by me.
Well, good. Yeah. We were up here.
Right, exactly. Day, but we're going to bring it back. We're going to bring it back right now.
Seriously, that's
we're going to talk
story.
About Cardinal Nation and Brian Jordan and what it was like. I think I saw an interview with you and I was doing some research. You said you got drafted, what, 1992 maybe by the Cardinals, whatever it was, but this immediately became home for you. Talk about it.
I wish it was 92. I'd be a lot younger, but it was in 88 when I was drafted.
88.
Yeah, by the Cardinals, first round and supplementary draft pick. I think it was like 27, 28 for Jack Clark. Again, you know, I was torn between football and baseball, and I had that opportunity to fly up to St. Louis, go down on the field and meet Whitey Herzog and Ozzie Smith and Vince Coleman and all those guys trying to talk me out of football and playing baseball. But, you know, Ozzie and those guys, they were awesome. You know, they just gave me their honest opinion. You know, they said, hey, you got the hammer. You know, football, baseball, use it, enjoy it. And then when you're ready to play baseball for good, it'll come around. And, you know, I was fortunate, again, like I said, to have that opportunity given to me by the Cardinals and the Falcons at the time. And, you know, it was fun. It was fun while it lasted. But, you know, as I tell everybody, it's no place like St. Louis. The fans there, they were embracing me right from the start. And if you play hard for Cardinal fans, they will love you forever. And I found that out early. Again, when you got good leadership around you, good mentors like Ozzie, Willie, Danny Cox and those crazy guys. I mean, we had a lot of fun. You know, we didn't win much. We were a lot younger then. We kind of set the tone. And then, you know, at the end of my time there, Tony La Russa came in, and that's when things started turning around.
So was that, when you think about the Cardinal playing days, that's obviously probably tough. Like you said, you weren't winning, but what was it like? I mean, you played for the Braves and you played for the Cardinals. We hear it all the time in St. Louis. We're the best fans in baseball, right? But like, you hear that and people say that, but why? Like, what makes that different versus the Braves? And we promise to not let any Braves fans hear this, Brian, so let it rip.
You know, Cardinal fans, they understand the game. And it's a big difference when you got fans that understand the game. They understand when guys play hard, when guys hustle, when guys give their best effort. And they give you the benefit of the doubt. You know, you go to other places, it's about, what have you done for me lately? You know, and if you don't perform one day, you're a bad player. But, you know, Cardinal fans, they don't see it that way. And, you know, again, if you come in there with the attitude that I'm going to give you all that I have and you give 110%, work your butt off, Cardinal fans are going to respect you. And again, I mean, every time I go back to St. Louis, they never forget you. And that's a good feeling.
Yep. So this question is really for Kyle, for I keep seeing Bridget's name on there. I almost called you Bridget, Kyle. But for Kyle and Jason and Brad, you guys coming out of the bullpen, talk to us about what that's like. That phone rings, you're sitting out there. What's that feeling? What's that emotion? There's Izzy's dog.
who's that little guy? That's awesome. I'll say for me, just coming out of the bullpen, hearing the phone ring, I'm still waiting for it. I'm still waiting for that emotion again in what is regular life now. There's nothing like it. The adrenaline rush that is there, hoping that it's your name being called, unless it was a close game late, then I knew it was going to be Izzy, which made me feel a little bit safer in general. But it's a cool feeling. It's also a cool feeling going to work every day and knowing that you have got a chance to impact the ball game in one way or another. I enjoy that aspect of being in the ball.
Yeah, I would agree with Brad on that. The starting and out of the bullpen, Izzy, me and Brad, Simo, we've all done it. But I did love that, coming to the park every day, having that opportunity to pitch and to contribute to your team. As a starting pitcher, you go in and you have a huge role. I mean, the game typically goes how the starting pitcher goes, but the other 4 days, you're a cheerleader. And it has its role, but I love that coming in. Maybe it's only an inning. Maybe it's a batter. Maybe it's two innings. You have to extend out a little bit. But knowing every day you came in, you had a chance to go in and contribute is great. But for me, it was a lot of anxiety. I mean, as the game started going along and you would try to play along with it and predict where you were going to be, you never knew for certain, but you always had a pretty good idea. And as that, about the fifth inning, you'd start really paying attention. And as you got to that sixth or that seventh inning and you're like, man, this has got, you know, my name written all over this scenario here. Then you start getting nervous. You start, you know, all the negative thoughts would go through your head. For me, while I was warming up, I would always have negative thoughts and I couldn't get it out. It would be like, man, it's a one run game. You know, don't give up a leadoff base hit or don't give up a leadoff double or all these things start going through your head. And you start thinking about all the ways that you could blow it. But as soon as I, and to the point where you're almost scared to death, but as soon as I would cross that gate coming out of the bullpen and go onto the field, I instantly was able to shed all that and you turn into the baddest person on the planet. And you would go in there, no matter who you're facing, no matter what your history is with that person, you go in there and you're invincible and you have to take that mindset. I was scared every time I was warming up, but I never once took it into the game. And you have to trick yourself. You have to fool yourself, whatever it is, but to go out there and say, hey, I'm bringing everything I have here. And if it's not good enough, it's not good enough, but I'm going to take everything I got and give it my best shot. But yeah, there's no feeling that instant heart attack when that phone rings and you're all looking, you know, everybody's looking at him like, who is it? Who is it? And it's like, Mac, it's you. And you're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. You know, just that there's nothing like it.
I think for me, it was a little different. I kind of knew when I was going to pitch. So, but like Kyle said, I had a fear of failure and I was able to turn that into adrenaline. And warming up, I had a very set routine of my stretching and these rubber heavy ball throws that I would do. And when I was warming up and throwing to Murph, our bullpen catcher, I had a select number of pitches I threw here, and curveballs, cutters, and stuff. So I was very detail-oriented on my routine. So, but then, like Kyle said, once you go through that gate, it's like my hair's on fire, and I'm going out there, and I'm going to destroy whoever I have to face. And, you know, yeah, you have those days when just nothing works, and you have a terrible day, and, you know, you feel like you've let the world down, your family, your friends, your teammates, your city, everything like that. So, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety that goes into that. So that's where the adult beverages come into play later, maybe. But, you know, it's one of those things, you know. I
have short-term memory, right?
Yeah, short-term memory. Take a shower, have a drink, go to bed, do it again the next day. And I knew myself, I was the one guy that if I had a bad day, the team was going to have a bad day. Starter can go out there and give up 4 runs in the first inning, and we still come back and win. And, yeah, you know, he might get a couple talks to by the reporters, but when you're pitching at the end of the game and you fail, there's going to be 20 reporters in front of your locker when you get back from the shower. And there was a lot of, like Kyle said, the anxiety, the fear of failing. A lot of guys can handle it, but there's a lot more guys that can't handle it. You know, it's really easy when things are going good, but when things go bad, they go bad quick. And when those bad days linger into 3 or 4 a week, and then the self-doubt comes into your brain, and then you don't even want to go to the ballpark. You're praying that Carp or Waino throws a complete game shutout or something. You don't want to go back in there.
Right.
You need a break. You need a mental break. Your body needs a break. And but I wouldn't change anything in the world for what I did. I thrived on the adrenaline. I thrived on the excitement. And like Brad said, there's I can't find much these days that gives me that kind of adrenaline and that type of competition of competing against the best hitters in the world. It's just not going to happen. I mean, I'll probably end up killing myself trying to find it, but one of these days I'm going to find that adrenaline rush again. I just hope I come out of it okay.
Hold my beer and watch this. So Brian, when you hear these guys talk about, man, they're invincible, they're all this stuff when they come out on the mound, I'm curious from a hitter standpoint, you got a lot of RBIs, a lot of home runs in your career. What was your mindset when you saw, like, you know, a Nizzy or a Brad, Simo, Kyle, whoever coming in the game?
Get lucky.
Get lucky.
Be aggressive. You know, for me, I used to just watch the pitcher warm up. And if he is, like, attacking the strike zone, hitting this, you know, corners and throwing a lot of strikes, my mentality in that batter's box is, okay, he's feeling good about himself. He's going to start out with a strike. So I'm going to be aggressive. It's funny that you said that because I was watching the game the other night when I was playing with the Braves and the Mets in 2001 after the 9/11. Mm. And late in the game, Franco was on the mound, a lefty who I hit 308 against. And then they had Benitez warming up, who I was 0-5 against. So for me, I'm sitting there knowing if Chipper gets a hit here, they're going to bring in Benitez because I'm 0-5. So my mentality was I was watching him warm up. I'm going to be aggressive. You know, forget about that 0-5. You know, that was yesterday. This is a new day. And, of course, first pitch he threw, I line a double in the gap. We go up 2-1 because I knew I had to be aggressive. I wasn't going to let him get ahead because if he gets ahead, I'm done. Because mentally, I know he got me. And so – When you're sitting there watching guys, you can read them, and that's what I did a lot of. But you had to have that mentality that, you know, you were not going to fail in my eyes as a hitter. I'm going to be aggressive. I'm going to attack the strike zone. And a lot of times, most of the times I was successful. A lot of times I were not. So, you know, that's baseball.
Well, it's just like what you're going to do on the first tee today, right? You got to be aggressive. You got to think positive.
Be aggressive. That's right. You hit a ball straight down the middle about 300. You're intimidating everybody.
That's right. Just put that driver back in the bag like you meant to do it.
Exactly. Don't say, just say to yourself, don't shank it, right? That's how you stand over the ball. That's what I do. Don't shank it.
Don't shank this.
Hey, Brad, I found the picture of Gerald Laird I was talking about.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Look at him.
That is
dancing queen.
I remember that picture. That's awesome.
Clearly demonstrates.
Well, I got a bunch of questions, but I'd like for our – I got my phone here if you see me looking at my phone. So if people listen and want to start asking some questions, fire those things up. I'll do my best to stay on top of and ask those questions. But if you can, you know, today is supposed to be opening day. We're supposed to have, as Mike Shannon would say, an ice cold Bud Light in our hands down there eating a Izzy likes it. He'd be down there doing the
Izzy,
same.
Let me see your hand.
Red jacket on today. The Clydesdales would be going around. You'd be wearing your World Series rings, all sorts of stuff. So tell us your favorite, if you can. I don't care what order we go in. We just rap about it. What was your favorite memory of opening day or just your favorite memory as a St. Louis Cardinal?
I'll start, I guess. My favorite memory was probably going to be today. It was going to be my first time wearing the red coat on the field, and it got postponed, and that's just buzzard luck.
You know, it's part of life.
That's some bull crap, man.
Crap. I'm just hoping everybody gets healthy and we get baseball going again. But yeah, this was probably going to be my favorite opening day memory this year. And just, you know, what are you going to do about it? We're here talking. We're healthy. My family's healthy. So my friends are healthy. So that's all I can worry about right now.
That's right. Where's the jacket? They keep it down there? Is it physically like up in your closet?
We get to wear it two times a year, once opening day and once during the ceremony, and they keep them because I'd probably lose mine or something.
They just keep yours. They don't want you to get mustard all over it.
Exactly. I'd be getting beer stains and mustard stains all over.
Izzy would wear it hunting. Does it say anything? Does it say Izzy inside, or what's the inside have?
It does say Izzy on the inside. Okay. They asked me what I wanted on it, and I said that you can save your thread count and just put Izzy on it.
I like it. You gave a hell of a talk there, man. If I can give you some kudos on that. If you want to go back and, you know, you're quarantined and need something to listen to, Google Izzy's talk on the when he got inducted. It was awesome. He did a great
Izzy talk. Had me crying. I was in the audience like a little baby.
Yeah. If you want to see a big so-called tough guy cry in public, go ahead and watch that.
Yeah, you should watch that.
That's right. That's right.
Not Izzy. Come on.
Here's a question from the audience before we go back to. Going back to what were our favorite Cardinal memory. This is for you, Izzy, from Josh Barber. It says, what's your mindset before coming into the game? Is there anything you do to reset after giving up a home run or giving up the lead the night before? What's your mindset?
All I concentrate, like BJ was saying, like I concentrate on the hitters. I wanted to know who was hot, who swung the first pitch. And that's all I cared about because I wanted to know whether or not I could throw that first pitch strike with a fastball or outside corner with a cutter or something like that. But my reset thing was my routine. So I relied on my routine. I knew if I did my routine every day, I did my job and my part. And then when I went out there and once I released the ball, everything's out of my control. So I really worried about, I concentrated on my routine, that whole thing. The process is more important than the product kind of speech. And I really concentrate on my process throughout the day. And that's how I got myself ready every day.
Got it. Good answer. So here's another one from John. He's talking about his son, Camden. So we're going to give some kid advice here. Whoever's got the best kid advice. Brad, this may be you. Did you ever drop any balls or get hit in the face or anything when you were playing catch?
Yeah, look, Izzy benched me in fantasy camp. He was my manager, and I booted a couple of balls at shortstop, and all of a sudden he pulled me off the field. It was embarrassing, honestly. I'm supposed to be like the legend guy that's supposed to be the former player, and I got yanked for a couple innings, too. He didn't let me back out there. I thought he was just kidding. Unlike maybe some of these other guys' paths to the big leagues, mine wasn't that there was never that conversation on any field that I was on that said, that guy right there, that kid, he's going to make it to the big leagues. Just so it wasn't the conversation. I was more on the line of, like, that kid might eat his booger. Watch him long enough. Might do it. But it goes back to the idea, if you love something, you keep doing it, you know. And for me, that was baseball. So I had plenty of bumps in the road. I had plenty of failures along the way. But here we are. You know, I get to chat with you guys. You know, that's the big key. Hey, you're going to fail. You're going to screw up. You're going to have bad times. But what do you do with them? You know, do you hang your head and pout about it? Or do you just keep going back out there and try to have more success? And I did that.
So that's Camden here. My cousin's kid. So Camden is he's playing. He's been hit in the face a few times. He's got a little anxiety around playing catch.
Hey,
so
he should get my book.
Look at this
baseball.
Go ahead, Brian. Hey, Brian, go ahead and plug the book. Where can we find it? What's the title of it?
Plug right there.
Perfect timing, man. I got hit in the face when I was a little kid, and I was so scared to get back in the batting spot.
What happened to you?
And my dad kept encouraging me to get back out there, and he kept throwing tennis balls at me, you know, over and over until I finally started hitting the tennis ball, and I got back out there on the field. So it's going to happen at some point. A little kid going to get hit with the ball, but you got to get back in there as quick as possible and overcome that fear.
I think I'm going to go on a limb here. I think Brian Jordan just got a book sale right there.
There we go.
Yeah, how does this work? Can we drop the link right under our video here?
Yeah.
Like to Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, the Brian below, Jordan
subscribe. Go to twosportman.com and you can order the book.
Oh, my gosh.
Or you can go to Barely One Sport Man and you'll see this.
Brad, in fairness to Izzy, before he benched you, he did try putting you in right field, but you blew that one too. And then,
yeah,
It's windy in Florida. Windy. You guys know that. Oh, it goes all over the place.
That's funny. So Jeff Seeberger says, what's been the best professional and personal advice they've been given in their life and who gave it to them? From Jeff Seeberger. Great question, Jeff.
Mine was Bruce Sutter came into the field one day and we were sitting down talking. It was one of my first times like really talking to him about baseball. And he goes, you're under a lot of pressure. You have to realize that you're when you come to the field, you're the one. If you have a bad day, the team's going to have a bad day. So it's like you're either the hero or the goat. There's no in between for you. And you're going to have to learn how to deal with that anxiety. And that's what I was talking about. Was like how you dealt with the anxiety of failing and things like that. And then Bruce kind of put things in perspective for me. And he was one of my heroes from 82, you know, closing out the World Series against the Brewers. And to sit down with him and talk about things was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that has to be surreal, isn't it? I mean, you watched it as a kid, obviously, just playing. You had no idea that you'd be a guy getting advice from him. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, and now, like, down at fantasy camp, like, Bruce and I get to talk to people about baseball, and just to be up there with Bruce is just it's an amazing experience and something I'll always treasure. And hopefully Bruce keeps coming down to fantasy camp for years to come. It's a lot of fun.
Anybody else got a great memory they want to share there?
I got to say, Joe Torre, I guess, gave me the best advice. As a matter of fact, people don't know this. He sent me to a psychiatrist because, you know, coming off the football field, I had that aggressive mentality, you know. If you throw at my head, I'm going to try to knock the ball to the moon. You know, I'm going to swing harder. And all you do is get yourself in trouble. And I just had all this anxiety in me before I go hit. So he sent me to a psychiatrist, and I learned how to relax. And once I learned how to relax and be patient, you know, my game turned around and I started becoming a better baseball player. I took all that aggressive, you know, anxiety away and relaxed and turned it around into a positive. So,
and that probably wasn't as normal back then, was it, to go see a psychiatrist or a coach like that?
Absolutely not. I mean, it came from left field. I would have never thought I would have visited a psychiatrist around baseball, but yeah, it really helped my career.
I wish somebody would have sent me to a psychiatrist, to be totally honest with you. I did have Scott Spezio give me an anger management book, so that felt good. Spezio is the best, looking out for me. I appreciate it.
That's
I had
good.
Some problems. Yeah.
Simon, anything, Kyle?
I had someone give me some sliding lessons. It was unbeknownst to me until after the fact, but we were in Cincinnati at the end of the game, and old Cincinnati, I guess, and I don't even know what the name of that field was. But so at the end of the game, we're in there taking a shower. You remember this, Izzy?
No, I don't remember anything.
Oh yeah, you do. Anyway, so we're in there, and you know, after the game, we're taking a shower, and it's a lot, like whatever. Just all the guys are in there, and all of a sudden, you just hear something screaming down the hall, and I'm get the water off my head, and I turn around. As soon as I turn around, I see this big, fat, white, hairy guy, butt naked, dive and slide through the shower into the wall. Now, he had a dirty hat too, by the way.
Good thing I'm not hairy. Oh.
Is that Kalani?
So he taught us how not to slide.
The story, the room was all tile, the hallway, the shower, and he rubbed baby oil all over his body and took off and slid all the way down the hallway through the shower and slammed through the wall. And, yeah, it was one of those must-see moments for sure.
Oh, gosh. Kyle, wow. Anything there on that?
Not on that, but a little differently. For me, it'd be hard to put it down to one thing, really. I had so many people that helped me, whether it's Dave Duncan, Tony La Russa, Izzy, Russ Springer, Ron Vallone is a guy that my rookie year, Brad Thompson was there as a big help. I mean, there's so everybody was willing to help out, you know, a young player, and you're trying to take a little bit of everything and put it to use. But you felt like everybody was looking out for you. Everybody, you know, had your best interest in what was going on. So for me, it'd be hard to point down to one thing, but I know my rookie year was full of hundreds and thousands of little things coming here and there that were helpful that I could use. And I look back on a lot of them now, lessons learned, and you don't realize at the time how some of those little comments or those little things people pointed out had such a big impact on your career, or, you know, that you could see that play out exactly what they were talking about. Just their experience was invaluable. So trying to soak up as much as you could those first few years. And I mean, even till you get to the last year, I mean, you're always still trying to learn and adapt and make changes.
This question comes from Matt. Matt says, this is for Brian Jordan. What was it like playing on the turf at Bush in July?
Oh my, it was the worst ever. You talk about heat waves on the field. We used to run off the field. Our spikes were on fire. I mean, we would just jump in a bale of ice, put your feet in the ice, and you end up changing your shoes a lot of times, you know, late in the game. I mean, that's how hot it was at Busch Stadium. I remember those days. That turf was incredible. But, you know, they changed it, and then everything worked out great.
I can't imagine having to change your shoes because the turf is so dang hot. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy, man. But Ozzie kind of, you know, as a rookie coming up, I mean, he gave me warning. I mean, he's like, hey, if you slide on this turf, dive, you know, you're going to leave your skin out there. And surely I left a lot of skin on that turf.
That's wild. So this one, you can tell me, this is one of my best buddies since third grade, Derek Meinhardt here. So we can just go like this. We'll let somebody be the governor. Are we going to go there with the Houston Astros thing?
Is he just going to tell us how good of a golfer he is? Is that what Derek's going to do?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Old Brad has played golf with Derek, and Derek's known as probably in the class of 1996, at least the second or third best golfer in the class of 1996. But anyway, this isn't about my career. This is about you guys, because Derek doesn't have a microphone, so I can say whatever I want right now. Anyway, are we even going to go there? Are we going next question?
The Houston thing is they're benefiting by all this not playing right now. But look, you don't have to avoid it. They did it. They got caught doing it. I think it's embarrassing for the game and all those associated with it. And they're going to have to face it. I mean, the players have to deal with it and face it. The manager and the general manager, they lost their jobs. But, you know, they're not having to show up and deal with this every day. Those players and what they had to go through in spring training, it's going to be interesting to see if this season does play out, how it goes. But, look, everybody – I think here's the general consensus. Everybody's always trying to look to get an edge, and you're trying to, you know, find those little things. But if you start bringing technology in, and going way above and beyond, there's no place in that for the game. I'm glad they caught it. Hopefully there's, you know, if any other teams were doing it, that it's done with and we can turn the page and move on. But it's definitely a black eye for the organization and for the game that hopefully we'll get past it here soon.
How many hit by pitches do you think those guys are going to have this year?
I saw the Las Vegas over-under had it at 86, I think it was. I'm going to take the under just to, you know, due to the fact that, man, who knows when we're going to start.
Right.
I'll take the under.
That's why you're so smart, Brad. That's why you're so smart. Here's a question from Chris Pickett. He said, this is awesome, guys. So thanks for being here. What ballparks did you love to play other than Busch Stadium? What was the best one? What was the worst one?
There's no worst one.
You're just lucky to be playing, right?
I think one of my favorites, PNC in Pittsburgh, I thought was a beautiful stadium. We were there a lot because it was in our division. Yep. And then one of my worst is probably the old Philly Stadium was one of the worst. And
Veteran Stadium.
Yep. Veteran Stadium. That was bad. And the bullpen.
Wasn't it true they threw batteries at Roland there or something?
Oh, they threw everything at everybody there.
Dan Santa. Yeah.
We had a guy that got hit with
wasn't it JD Drew?
A mustard down and got hit in a jersey during the game. I mean, we've had everything thrown at us there.
That's unbelievable.
I love Dodger Stadium.
Dodger Stadium?
Love it.
What'd you like about it?
It was just iconic to me. And the field itself, I mean, it's L.A., it's Southern California. You're not going to find, like, a better turf than that. I don't know. There was just something about it that took me back. I love it. And the mound, I felt like I was on top of the hitter. Like, there are some of those mounds where you feel like you're in center field, and there are other ones that you feel like you're right on top of the hitter. Wrigley, to me, I felt like I was in center field all the time. And it felt like it was wavy. And I don't know if that was me from before or if it was the field in general. But, Dodger Stadium, I just felt like I was on top of people.
Did you grow up a Dodgers fan being from Las Vegas, or what was your
– No, I grew up watching – so WGN and TBS. So I'm watching Cubs and I'm watching Braves. And then I was actually an A's fan as well because Bash Brothers at that time, and so I followed them a little bit. But I didn't have that allegiance. You know, that's one thing I'm actually missing in my life. So if you guys want to get me on any team that you guys are really behind, I don't have a team outside of the Cardinals that I truly care about. So I'm taking applications at this point.
Okay. Vegas Raiders.
Hey, I've already bought my gear.
My favorite field is the newer field, and that was Petco Park, going to San Diego, man. I just love the weather there, the fact that the field was downtown. You can almost walk to the stadium. I'm a lot older than these guys, so Montreal was probably a dark and dingy place. Yeah. Izzy, you probably been there, Izzy.
Taking the dirty subway up to that stadium was the worst.
I didn't like the stadium, but I like going to Montreal.
That's awesome. What about when you're talking about walking the stadium? What was it like? Because I was the kid, my parents would take me to remember the ballpark Hilton used to be around the old bush there. And you know, I was the kid that would stand out there and wait for autographs, right? Cause the opposing team would stay at that Hilton. They'd walk across the street. And I remember this like it was yesterday. We're walking. Did you guys ever do this to anybody? I got to know. Joaquin Andujar. Does anybody know Joaquin Andujar personally?
No.
Okay. Well, because if you get this message to him, I appreciate it. He says, I asked him for his autograph. He said, no hablo inglés, and he kept walking. Do you guys ever do that because you're tired of people just coming up to you and asking for autographs?
I can't pull that one off.
No. All right. We'll go next question here. Chris Hersey wants to know best advice for all ages and skill levels of baseball players to work on their game during this time off the field. What would you be recommending for these kids?
Repetitions.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be crazy. You can do dry swings. If you're a hitter, you can hit off a key, simulate. I'm kind of doing the same thing with my kids where, you know, it stinks. They should be playing soccer and softball right now and baseball, but they're not. So trying to keep repetitions on the tee, maybe 15, 20, you know, 25 swings, trying to hit wiffle balls off the tee or whatever it is, you know, throwing off a wall, just fielding ground balls, just trying to keep as many repetitions as you can going.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
So question from Evan Mallon says, I know Kyle's got Brace for Impact, which does a phenomenal work in Haiti and in North St. Louis. Any other causes? And Kyle, you can plug that as well. But Evan wants to know anything you guys are involved with and why did you choose that?
Well, I started my foundation in 1998, the Brian Jordan Foundation, giving scholarships to high school seniors in need. We focus on single-parent homes, families not making more than $50,000 between the both of them. But kids who really excel and do what they're supposed to do in the classroom that deserve to go to college. So this past year, we gave out 26 scholarships. And I have a reading program. I write children's books. So I partner with schools now with the Brian Jordan Reading Challenge. So that's my cause. And you can go to brianjordanfoundation.com if you want to learn more about it.
That's awesome.
And link is below.
Yeah, the link is below.
We're splitting the commission six ways on any of these book sales too.
There we go.
Simo?
I'm a charity guy for everything. I mean, I've helped out Pujols, I've helped out McClellan. Izzy. I have a nephew that has autism. Obviously today's 4/2. It's autism day, autism awareness month now. I'm a big advocate for that. But I mean just like the other guys on this call right here, we do what we can with anybody when they call. And that's, I mean, just in general with the St. Louis people, the guys that live here, I mean, it's like family. So when someone calls and, hey, can you help me out here and this and that? I mean, we're out reaching out and doing as much as we can in the community and helping each other. So, right. I mean,
it's amazing to see what you guys do, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like Simo. I mean, I try to help as much as I can with different charities. You've got an event coming up with Mr. McClellan here in a couple months. Hopefully. If that's still going to be going on, I hope, with a bunch of closers in town. And so we'll get Kyle to plug that in here in a little bit. But it's like Jason says, I mean, everybody has a golf tournament. I go down to Atlanta to see BJ when I can for his foundation's tournament. And with Albert, Mike Matheny, Autism Speaks has a tournament around town. Diabetes.
Did you say Swing for Hope? I didn't. Did you say Swing for Hope?
Swing for Hope.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said there.
You can plug that in, too, if you want. you know, it's just part of being part of the community. Whatever somebody's got going on, we're always there to help. You know, what little we can. Our name may bring somebody in or may bring some money in for an organization. And when we can do things like that, it's just amazing to watch what people come together for these different organizations. And what these guys are doing with their organizations are just amazing. I know Kyle does a ton for the kids over in Haiti with the schools and the churches. He's invited me to go to Haiti a couple of times, and I just can't pull the trigger to go down there. it's amazing what these guys are doing for a lot of people, and I commend all of them for it.
Kyle?
Plug it away.
My wife and I started Brace for Impact, you know, back 6 years ago. It's been a wild ride to kind of see where it's going. But, you know, this is really what I spend 95% doing. I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid to do it, but we do it because, you know, we've been given a platform. And to me, it would be a shame to waste that, you know, when you have the opportunity to help people. And so thankfully, I'm able to dedicate some time to it. And we've had tremendous support, which has allowed us to start down in Haiti with community development. Adam Wainwright's another partner, and we have a third partner as well. So we get to be a team doing it, which is even better. But we have a school, a hospital, a children's home, water and sanitation, a vocational school. We touch about 40,000 people every day and make their lives better. And it's all about developing that community and creating leaders that can go forth and kind of make it better for the people that are coming next. And then in St. Louis, we get to work in an area that's close to home and special to my wife and I, you know, being from St. Louis and making our name there. But we have a lot of need in St. Louis as well. And so working with families there, trying to stabilize them and their kids to give them the opportunity to go out and be successful. And we're doing that through buying and renovating homes, hiring local workers to do the work and creating jobs and opportunity for them. So it's what I feel like I was built and made to do. I feel like baseball was a vehicle for me to kind of get some, to learn some lessons and get some exposure so that I could, you know, do what I do now on a scale of helping a lot of people. So it's fun. It's challenging, especially right now. The coronavirus is in Haiti and the numbers that they're throwing out there are beyond fearful. If it does what they're saying it's going to do is going to be something that I don't want to be a part of, but have to be. So scary times right now for everybody.
It looks like Brian may have to get going. We'll shut it down here in a minute, guys. And Brian, you got to go hit the links. Be careful out there, man. Links. Thanks for joining us. Hey, and two guys have already plugged down here. Evan and Chris Pickett have already plugged the BrianJordanFoundation.com website right here.
Nice.
So there we go. Thank you, guys. So we'll put some more stuff on here. All right. See you, Brian. Thanks for joining
us. Get them straight.
Take care, guys.
All right, BJ.
All right.
All right, and then last question for you guys, unless we got another one coming in, if you got to jump. But anybody that you guys owned or owned you, so if you look at it from a hitting standpoint, or you guys are all pitchers now, anybody you own that we can talk about?
That side of the list is not very long for me. The other side, I've got a few. Lance Berkman comes to mind. That's a guy that I hated facing. Apparently, he's a great teammate and all. I don't think much of him, to be totally honest. Derek Lee had my number. Derek Lee and Brett, I think I've told you this story before, but Derek Lee actually got me on an episode of ER that apparently plays a lot because I get people that tweet me my picture on ER. It was like a make-a-wish thing that Derek Lee did. And this, you know, sick kid in the show said, "Derek, would you hit a home run for me?" And he's like, "I'll try, buddy." And he freaking hits a bomb onto Waveland off of me. So that gets played quite a bit. I'll send you the link if you need it.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think you tweeted that out not too long ago. It was
classic. Yeah. I remember the negatives far more than I remember the positives, which is not a good character trait. But I think it's one that we probably all share.
Hey, but you know what you do have? Something that a lot of us, I would almost say everybody watching this doesn't have. You have a World Series.
Rugged good looks. Oh.
Well, yeah. Well, that too. You got great looks and
tremendous rugged. Man. Rugged. Baby face Brad. Yeah. Rugged good looks.
Exactly.
Casper.
Whoa.
Casper, really?
Yeah. Get some sun.
It's get free. That's sun. What they say. It's safer inside right now.
Right. That's true. Anybody else? Izzy, anybody you own? Kyle, Simo?
I don't think. I think Barry Bonds was like 1-for-15 off of me with a home run in St. Louis.
Dang.
And I don't believe A-Rod ever got a hit off of me, but I'm not for sure because I faced him a lot in Texas and in, when he was in Seattle.
That's awesome. Those are good names. Kyle?
For me, Derek Lee was my guy that I love to see. I think he was
you see what you just did there, Brad?
Yeah.
What the hell? How'd you do it?
It was always the same at bat, too. We would almost always go 3-2, and I would get him on a curveball at the end. So Brad didn't have a curveball. That might have been
a curveball.
I've been it.
No, I never got to 3-2.
Yeah. He always had long at bats, but it always ended up well. And then in Wrigley, he actually finally got a hit off me, and Brendan Ryan had tipped off his glove. And so I think he ended up maybe being like 1-for-11 off me. But
yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, thanks for sharing the story, Kyle. Really, you want me to mute him, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Tell me how you did against Berkman, too. I'm sure you dealt.
Yeah, I was 0 for 3, I think. But Hunter Pence was a guy that owned me. Hunter Pence.
He wasn't even a good hitter.
Yeah. And Miguel Tejada, those two were the ones that I struggled with.
I think Kyle asked you that question. He's got his list in front of you. Bridget's holding a piece of paper in front of him with stats. Like, here's what's happening right now.
I got to get a baseball those reference. Exactly. Hold on.
That's not cool. Come on, man. If you guys need to bolt, I could do this all day, but you guys need to just mute off if you want to go off. But
yeah, I got a lot to do. They've shut down all the golf courses in Illinois.
That's right. So we're just going to keep rocking if it's all right. Wow. Kyle, you know you're burning like woods and stuff out there. Let me rephrase. You're not burning trees and stuff. You're burning like tall grass and all that kind of stuff.
So. I want to hear Simo's, and then I am going to take off. Not
Simo's,
like that.
Simo's best batters you dominated.
I've got two guys that I did well against. So it was Ken Griffey Jr. and Sammy Sosa.
Man.
And I don't know what – I don't think Griffey got any hits off me. I think it was like 8 or 9 times I faced him. But everybody else, I'm like on their home run list. I gave up a boatload of those. So.
Did you saw King Griffey Jr. today? Sorry, go ahead.
What's that? Go ahead.
No, if you saw King Griffey Jr. today, would you tell him that he's 0-for against you?
No, because I'm not that type of guy. I don't know that guy that well.
What did you say, Brad?
I would for sure. That was the one guy that when I faced him the first time, I probably had a grin ear to ear. Because, I mean, I had his rookie card. If you didn't do the Ken Griffey Jr. swing in the backyard, you weren't growing up right. And I remember facing him like this. Yeah, here he comes. Ground ball to second base. Got him.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was when Ken Griffey Jr. wasn't as good anymore. But, you know, still counts.
That's all right.
I'll tell you a quick my quick Ken Griffey story. So it was like Brad. It was my welcome to the big leagues moment. I remember standing on the mound and they said, "Now batting Ken Griffey Jr." And it was the only time in my career I stepped off the mound. I just kind of rubbed the ball up and I was like, "I'm gonna soak this in. Like, this is Ken Griffey Jr." Then I walked him on 4 straight pitches and I was so mad at myself. I'm like, just let him hit a home run. Who cares? You know, it's Ken Griffey Jr. So I face him again. Like, I don't know later. I don't know when it was, but I face him again the second time. And I give him he fouls a ball straight back and he starts shaking his hand. And I immediately think he broke his handmade bone. Like, that's a common injury that you'll see with hitters. And so I'm like, you know, playing it cool on there, and he's shaking his hand off, and it's an 0-2 count at this point. And so he kind of gets in there, and I give him the cool, like, "Hey, you good?" Like, the head nod, like, me and him are, like, you know, really,
your boys.
Really cool or something. And I'm, you know, kind of give him the, like, respect, like, you know, "I'll give you some time." And so he gets in there, and I'm like, "I'm going to throw the nastiest curveball I've ever thrown right here, and I'm going to punch out King Griffey Jr. And I want it to be looking, because I'm going to like, dance off the mound if I do it." And so I throw a good curveball, and he just gets out in front, and he just barely flicks it down to the first baseman. And I was so mad that I didn't strike him out, but I'm running down along. I have to go cover the base. And so I'm like running close to him and catch it. And it was just kind of a cool, like, I'm running right next to King Griffey Jr. as I just am about to get him out. But that was definitely my welcome to the big leagues. Like, wow, I'm really on the mound facing Ken Griffey Jr. That's a pretty surreal moment for me in my career. I'm sure Izzy, same with, you know, Barry Bonds and some of those guys. But that was definitely it for me.
Some of the best. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, there's a question on here, and I know you got to go, Kyle, real quick, but Jeff Sieberger wants to know, who's tagged the biggest deer between Izzy and Kyle?
Izzy's got a lot more money. I would say he paid for some.
probably free rent. Well, I'm going to say Kyle, because mine are – I have paid for a few deer for sure, but that's not quite the same.
Kyle, you got a big one last year on your own property.
I did, yeah. I got it. My biggest is 168.
160. For a non-hunter, I don't even know what that means.
What does that mean? Pretty,
yeah, exactly. I'm with you, BT.
God, you guys need to get out a little bit more.
Yeah. Hey, Izzy, this thing right here, it works, and you could call me.
Exactly.
Go shoot some stuff.
Let me check my messages too, Brad. I'm going to see if I've got any messages. I don't see any. Hey, Brad, how about you? If Kyle, you got a bolt, man. Thanks for being with us. You're awesome. Yeah. I'll see you soon.
I'm going to take off. Thanks, guys. Guys, great to see you. Happy opening day.
See you, Kyle.
See ya. Brad, how did you get into radio? I think it's a pretty cool story, man.
Yeah, I didn't pitch well enough. And had to have something to fall back on. No, it's actually really funny, and I tell people all the time, the guy that got me into radio and the guy that put my name out there the first time was Chris Duncan, who obviously, if anybody listened to this, if you're a Cardinal fan, you know Dunk passed away last year after a long battle with cancer. And Dunk was already doing a radio show here at ESPN, and he was going through his first bout with his brain tumor, and I didn't know that at the time, but he had passed along my phone number to somebody here, to the program director, and said, "Hey, I think that if Brad's in town, he might want to do this. He might try." You know,
did you just mute yourself, Brad? There we go.
What did I?
No, there you go. Now we're back.
No, but they asked. They called me on a Friday, asked if I could come in and do the show on a Monday. I did, and one segment in, they asked me if I could come back for the rest of the week. And the rest of the week turned into an entire off season before I went out and played again. And it's turned into a full-time gig. And I got to be honest, I love it. It can get challenging at times, you know, like when there's not any sports. You know, now would be one of those times.
Right.
But no, I love it so much. I got such a good – I've been blessed throughout my career to have great teammates. Simo and I roomed together in AAA in 04 for a little bit.
Nice.
Izzy, Kyle McClellan. Had so many great teammates along the way, but I got great teammates doing what I do now too, and I love it.
Awesome. So last question for you, and I'll let you boys go. Talk to us about since Yachty's still playing, you guys all play with Yachty, pitch to Yachty. What's it like – to, in again, biased opinion here, but probably the best catcher to ever play the game. What's it like to pitch to Yachty, and do you ever call that guy off?
I was lucky. My career in St. Louis, I pitched to two of the best catchers I've ever pitched to were Mike Matheny and Yachty. I consider Mike more of a mechanical guy and Yachty more of just a natural talent type of guy. Both Gold Glove pitchers or catchers. Usually the only time I shook either one of them off because of the way they do their homework and they know all the hitters was when I wanted to throw a curveball. That was the only time I ever shook them off. And other than that, you just kind of follow their lead because they do a lot more homework than you do on the hitters.
So you just show up and you just know. They throw down the one, you're throwing the fastball, and you just trust it and then get it ready to rock.
For the most part, yeah.
Yachty for me just gave me more confidence in everything that I was going to throw. Because when he put something down, I'm like, damn it, you might know something I don't know. Here we go. Let's do it. And another thing that Yachty did, and I know Matheny did the same thing, Izzy and Simon, you threw to him as well. But he took all the thought. If there was a runner on first, who cares? Like, I'm not as worried about him. I know if I give you a tiny bit of time, that you're going to be able to get that guy. So I don't have to worry about that. He just took that off the plate for young pitchers specifically, but for everybody.
Yep. Simo?
Yeah, both of those guys. I threw to, obviously, Matheny a lot more than I threw to Yachty. But both of those guys, Izzy is a power pitcher. Brad and I were, hey, dude, we don't want to throw more than three pitches to you. And the thought process of calling pitches, having to put balls in the dirt, knowing that the fact that the ball's going to get snuffed, it's going to sit right there. The running game, they pretty much shut down. Obviously, Yachty's got a cannon and throws the ball well. And Mike was obviously, like Izzy said, you know, just a machine back there. But the ball was always a foot off the ground right above the bag when he threw the ball. And both of those guys were managers on the field. Very prepared, intense. Obviously, had the passion. But, I mean, there's a lot of respect. There's no doubt. Like Izzy said, those are probably two of the best. I mean, you think about even the Cardinals. Before that, I mean, it was Pagnozzi, right? So they literally had three catchers in the last 30 years, pretty much, almost, right?
That's a good point.
I mean, you talk about something special and pitchers to be able to throw to a backstop like that. They don't come around too long or too often.
Well, anything, guys, you want to close with? Any other Cardinal memory you think our fans would like to hear? And if not, it's been great being with you guys.
For me, man, I just want to say – go ahead, Brendan. Oh, I was just going to say, I just want to see you, my man. I just want to see opening day, Jason Isringhausen putting his jacket on and being out there shaking hands. Because that, to me, is one of my biggest honors of my career, is getting an opportunity to shake hands with the Hall of Famers on opening day. And, Izzy, I can't wait for that day for you.
Well, what I was going to say. I just want everybody to pay attention to what's going on around them and everybody get healthy, stay healthy, and get through this and get back to playing sports and getting back to our normal lives. And when that day comes, Brad, it's going to be fun for everybody. My family is going to be very excited. So just looking forward to that. But, yeah, more than anything, I just want to get this pandemic over with, and let's get moving along.
You're going to cry on that day.
Yeah, he might. The big man might cry. You know, crying's out. You're already done?
it's okay to cry. It shows your true feelings.
That's right. That's right. Well, guys, hey, man, and to our listeners, everybody's like Izzy just said, stay safe. You know, stay home. Take care of yourselves. Take care of your family. I can't thank you guys enough. And to Kyle and Brian, who already left, I mean, you guys got a lot of better people to talk to than me. And it's just been awesome to have you as a diehard Cardinal fan. I've been going to baseball games literally my whole life. Being an only child from Matt Toon, we would drive down. I've watched every single one of you guys. So when you talk about running next to King Griffey Jr. or whatever, I've watched all you guys, man. You're all my heroes. And the cool thing is getting to know all of you is you are down to earth. You are approachable. You're as cool as anybody could be. And you guys are just awesome. So thanks so much for being with us. I know you got a lot of things going on. You got your families, you got homeschooling going on, all sorts of stuff. So spend over an hour with guys like you has been absolutely awesome. Thank you, gentlemen. It's great being with
you. Thank you, Brett.
Appreciate Thanks it. For having be us, good. Brett. Appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Be good. See you, Brett.
Right. See you later. See you.
Tune in next week for another episode of The Circuit of Success with Brett Gilliland on the lineupmedia.fm podcast network. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and through our website, circuitofsuccess.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and email any questions to info@circuitofsuccess.com. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.